This is T. Hoffman with another edition of Law Strategy Corp's weekly podcast. I'm really happy today to have Stephen Long with us from Precision. Stephen, I'm going to get that right soon. Precision
Legal Marketing. That's right. Be very precise.
And Stephen is actually the head of Precision Legal Marketing. And I read that you founded your company about 5 years ago. I'm 6 years old. And so I know you've had a pretty long history in legal. I know you were with LexisNexis for a while, and you've worked in other fields within legal. So tell me how you got into Precision Legal Marketing, what you do, why you stayed in legal.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm happy to be with you. I fell in love with the law when I was a kid. I don't know why. It just happened. I just never ended up going to law school. But I ended up getting into marketing 25 years ago or so, and I started on the print side. And as I got a little bit older, I kept getting hired by companies to transition marketing and advertising venues, if you will, from print to digital. And so I honed my teeth in digital for the last, 15 years or so, and ended up in just staying in legal. My whole path, I dealt with attorneys and law firms. And so
I just
stayed on the road. I just went down, but the real reason for us being, I guess the better question is, why are we in business? We exist. We should be called Rescue Legal Marketing, because we end up rescuing countless law firms from bad situations, from getting ripped off by marketing people. And I mean, as you know, our business is absolutely inundated with bad actors.
Right.
And it's unfortunate. And so we end up in situations where we're just rescuing people and helping them get out of those situations and, onto success.
Yeah, I think that's important because, as you know, there are a lot of smaller firms especially who are susceptible to that, but large firms aren't immune to those tactics either. So I think that's a very good mission to rescue them. Let me ask you, over the last 5 years, I know I have seen some changes in the legal market, and I'm sure you have as well. What are some of the significant changes that you've seen in the legal market in the last 5 years since you've been in business? And then after you answer that, we'll talk a little bit about the current market.
Well, I mean, aside from the usual, disassembly of large law firms and, all of that market shift, I approach everything from a web search or a marketing perspective with a heavy emphasis on search marketing, right, on the internet. But aside from that, I've noticed in the last 5 years, law firms that tend to be more successful than not are using things like CRM systems.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that a lot in mid-sized to large law, where partners who honestly probably weren't using a computer are being really kind of forced to get involved with a CRM and really maintain good data and data quality and all those things. And then on the marketing side, the biggest thing I've seen change in the last 5 years is not necessarily a law firm's openness to tracking what's called a conversion, but really the technology to back that up.
Right.
And, even for 20 years or 30 years, you've been able to track phone calls coming in off your marketing efforts.
Right.
And so in the old days, you'd put an ad in the Yellow Pages and you might have a tracking line. But beyond that, those calls weren't recorded. You didn't know where that stuff was really coming from. So now, the emphasis on conversion tracking, which is a phone call, a live chat on your website, a filled out form on your website, that has really transformed the business really in the last 5 years. I mean, not to cut you off, but aside from all the Facebook changes and
I mean, these client relationship management systems, it's hard for me to believe that a firm can function today without tracking, when they last touched their clients and what they last did for their clients, and having that knowledge spread throughout the firm in a transparent way, because you can look really silly if another partner in a firm approaches that same client and, pitches business when that particular client's already doing business at your firm just in another practice area.
Yep. And it happens all the time.
It really does. And the worst thing that I've seen, and I've unfortunately seen this in a firm where I worked, is sending out, for example, holiday cards to people who are no longer living. you know, because no one went in and updated any kind of system to let anybody else in the firm know not to send anything else to that particular person. And so, and on the digital side, going back to the analytics and using that data in order to drive more traffic to your website, have you seen a significant change in the focus on SEO, keywords, all of those kinds of things that are driven by content and the back end of sites?
Well, not to sidestep the question, but so yes, but more specifically, it's really the algorithmic changes at Google. As we know, Google leads the market. And when they do something, we need to figure out how to react to it because they don't give us a roadmap.
Right.
So that can be really frustrating. But in terms of what a law firm should be doing out there, you need to have a website, you need to have it optimized for search, and you should be running some sort of paid marketing. It may be some exclusions being business lit firms or B2B firms. But if you're practicing in what I call a consumer facing practice area, criminal law, divorce, personal injury, you should be running paid campaigns. And so what's really changed in the last 5 years, T, is that the avenues where you're able to do that have shifted. And so what was once, you could get onto Google and buy ads on Google and pretty much be sustainable. Mm-hmm. You can't anymore. The need to spread yourself out and really have a strategic marketing plan in place has never been greater.
Yeah. I think you hit on a key word, which is strategic. And I think a lot of firms kind of do scattershot marketing instead of actually thinking through what they should be doing and also looking at it through the client's eyes versus through the lawyer's eyes. As a lawyer, I can tell you it's easy to fall into that trap where I want to tell everybody about my, 25 years of experience, but I don't want to tell them how I can solve their particular problem.
That's a really good point. And it's difficult to tell people how you can solve their problem in various marketing channels. And you see firms, I think the biggest mistake I see firms make now is they do the same thing they've done on television, in social, and on Facebook ads.
Right. And you definitely are targeting different audiences. You know, if you're on Instagram, you're definitely targeting a younger demographic than you are on LinkedIn, for example.
Absolutely.
So it's important to, you can't just use Hootsuite or some other form of shared media and expect to get the same kind of results. Although a lot of people do it, including myself, because it's easier,
We use those tools. We use those. So those type of tools are tools for us to use. You know what I mean? And I think what you're alluding to is firms, they buy a Hootsuite subscription and they think that's going to just magically.
Cure it.
Yeah. It's not just the vehicle you're using to market yourself, but the message has to be different. So what works on AdWords, obviously, but it's not going to work on Facebook, but what works on Facebook will not work on Instagram, will not work on, believe it or not, TikTok is huge. I don't know about you.
Huge. Yeah, I've got a TikTok account. I have not utilized it yet, but I plan to utilize it. I actually held off because I was waiting on the court ruling. And so, I didn't want to produce content on TikTok for it to only be taken down. But I will say, I believe TikTok is something that's definitely going to especially propel people who have those unique personal brands and are able to maximize those in that format. So I think you're absolutely right.
Well, even if you don't have a unique personal brand, right? I mean, if you watch some of the better content creators on YouTube, like you go to mm-hmm. YouTube and you find a channel that has 5 million subscribers.
Oh, yeah.
And is not doing something goofy. I'm talking about just a fairly, as an example, Wendover Productions. They do a lot of airline stuff, super, super granular, detailed animation graphics, very professional, very well done on YouTube. But mm-hmm. if you look at the type of content they're producing for TikTok, it's different. It's short form. It's similar to what they're doing on YouTube, but the whole thing there is they want to attract you to go watch their YouTube video. And then they use their YouTube channel to try to sell you ads and obviously buy t-shirts and other things from them. It's a non-law firm example. But if you're sitting in a law, if you're a lawyer right now listening to this, go look at some of the better content creators that are on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, go see what they're doing and copy it as an attorney. It works.
Yeah. And Grant Cardone is somebody who I follow. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he does this 10 times revenue campaign, and it's for sales folks. but he has a great following, you know, on YouTube, but he's maximized that through all these other networks, and he's got a great website as well. So, you know, he tracks everybody. So it's just an interesting how legal has not gotten there yet as a profession. Now let's talk about COVID, because obviously many people have been working at home for the last 7 or 8 months now. And how has that changed, if at all, the way that people are utilizing marketing, especially digital marketing, the space where you are, and they're searching?
Kind of an interesting shift in search traffic during, if you look at charts of keyword searches, and let's just take, I don't know, let's pick one. Let's go divorce. Are you okay with that?
Yes.
So we'll talk about matrimonial law. In New York City, for example, on March 15th, the search volume went from, let's just say, if you're scaling it to 100, it went down to 2. I mean, it dropped off a cliff. You know, you had countless law firms pausing their ad programs. Nobody was searching for a divorce. Everybody's freaked out about coronavirus. And right. As you know, New York City completely shut down. If you fast forwarded back into July, it went straight back up and has not stopped.
Wow.
The reason I bring that up is historically, as you and I talk, it's the beginning of October. Mm-hmm. About mid-September, divorces fall off a cliff in terms of volume. In terms of filings, in terms of searches on the web, in terms of firms being hired. There's some child custody things out there that folks can play with, but divorces in a whole fall off until what we call here internally is divorce day, which is typically January 2nd.
Right. Everybody's waiting to get that tax credit, right?
Well, right. So you've got January 2nd, you've got Valentine's Day for obvious emotional reasons, and right. Then you've got mid-April, which is another big swing. Well, from about July, it starts tapering off. Well, we are seeing more filings. All of my family law attorneys are absolutely inundated with business, and that's been a huge shift. And so the question is, well, what will happen to that at the beginning of the year?
Right.
Will it stay high? Will it, like, I've got, you know, we've got sites that we manage that have doubled their traffic.
Right.
Since May or June, and they've sustained that. And I mean, I got to tell you, listen, I'm here to, I mean, we can boast all day about search engine optimization and improving people's website traffic and all that stuff. That's unheard of. That just doesn't.
Right. Happen. Yeah. You know, I think that's interesting. And I know we talked earlier about, let's just take a B2B firm, for example. Have you been able to track any changes in those firms as far as traffic?
Yeah, it's flat. It isn't down, but it's not up. It's flat. Anything criminal justice related or civil justice is way, 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 way up. But B2B firms, they're flat. When I talk to those firms, and we do have some on our roster, mm-hmm. they're dead as a doorstop, kind of waiting around for corporate bankruptcies to fire up.
Right. I would think bankruptcies, foreclosures, you know, lease negotiations, I think are going to be huge. All of those kinds of real estate type developments. So
well, absolutely, because sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but okay. But you've got, you've got forbearance right now, right?
Right.
In many states in the country, not all of them. Mm-hmm. So when does that end? And when that doesn't, right. where is that going to come? When the banker comes knocking on the door, your landlord comes knocking on the door, and you got to pay, you know, XDX number of $1,000 in rent.
Right.
You don't have a check.
Exactly.
All of our B2B firms are going to be busy.
Oh, yeah, I agree. So now let's talk about how you get out in front of law firms in general and what you see with some of the law firms. You walk into a law firm, let's say it's a 50-lawyer firm, 40 to 50-lawyer firm. They haven't done a website or any kind of marketing as far as digital in 8 years. How far behind are they, and what do they need to be doing?
Typically, that's a light years behind. So. Ugh. You know, if you compare it to furniture, that's like furniture from the 70s.
Oh, wow.
That's the equivalent. So yeah, 8 years is a real long time. There's a break about 5 years ago. And if you run into a firm who built a site about 2015, it still kind of carries itself well. But you know, everything you see a lot of mobile compatibility issues. So what those websites look like on mobile phones. Search engine optimization has certainly changed a lot since then. But then the upside of that is they've had a website for 8 years or longer. And so you know, they've had the benefit of having Google, you know, looking at that website for 8 to 10 years. That's not a downside. So what you see a lot of times is when you redo some of those sites and you write some new fresh content for them and you put up a whole bunch of new pages and you start writing blogs, you get a nice bump in traffic just from redoing that website. But if you're out there right now with an 8-year-old website, I hate to say it, but you're behind the times.
And so for a typical firm, how often should they be doing a total redo? And by that, I mean, I know recently in the last 2 years, for example, WordPress, if you were writing your website on WordPress, some of their themes changed and they disabled some themes that some sites were built on. I mean, how long is too long to go? Is it 3 years? Is it 5 years?
I think it depends on what practice areas you're in,
mm-hmm.
What kind of turnover your firm has had. If you've got name partner changes, then that's problematic. And then you're going to need to change with that name partner change. You're going to need to make some wholesale changes.
Right.
But assuming that hasn't really happened, right? And assuming you're in a consumer-facing practice area, mm-hmm. if you're in a major geographic region, 3 to 5 years, 5 years.
Okay.
And I know like sales guys will tell you, you should redo your site every 3 years. No, that's not always the case.
Okay, so 3 to 5 years, so that's good. And so what do you see, let's say we're looking at a 5-year-old website, what do you see that these particular firms are really lacking in terms of their digital marketing strategy?
Usually it runs the gamut, because when you leave a website untouched that long, typically they don't have a really good social presence going. If they don't have internal marketing staff, they're social media marketing is just not up to par. So usually that's where the biggest holes are. But I mean, mm-hmm. we see everything from pages that used to be there that aren't anymore, to broken code, to broken links, to broken pictures, to old pages of firm members who are no longer there, but it's still in Google. Like, you name it, we see it. But on a whole, you know, every 5 years is pretty solid.
I think that's good. So now, Steve, if people wanted to get in touch with you, I know that you have a email address,
okay.
I actually have it written down right here, sales at Precision Legal Marketing. And what I want to do is make sure that if people have additional questions, because if most of these listeners are like me, they will think of questions or want to ask questions. And because this is an audio recording, we want to make sure they can reach you to get those questions answered. So is there anything else before we wrap up that you would like to add?
Yeah. You know, I would say that if you've really got questions, don't email me, call me or text me. And so
okay.
My cell phone number is 757-561- mm-hmm. 6811. And I leave that number open to my clients, large or small. And if you're out there and you just have general questions, you want to have a conversation, give me a call. I'm willing to have it with you.
That's fantastic. You're a very brave man for giving that information out too.
Well, it's okay. I mean,
no, it's great customer service. Yeah. It's great customer service. So I just want to thank you for taking the time to actually be on our Law Strategy Coach podcast this week. If you all want to reach out to me, you can reach me at tea@lawstrategycoach.com. It's tea@lawstrategycoach.com. And Steve, repeat your phone number one more time.
Should I do it cheesy here? 757-561-6811. No.
All right. That's fantastic. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we will talk soon.
Thank you, T. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right.